that with it thou mayst blow thy enemies to tiny bits in thy mercy.
It's all here. Fast kicking, low scoring, and ties. You bet.
Here's Higuain. Oh, it's gone in! There it is! The first hat trick in 12 years! Ola Kamara has it!
Columbus Crew FC looking like the next Candy Crush saga. Who doesn't love Candy Crush? I do.
Yes! Yes! Oh, God, yes!
Hey, buddies, it's the Massive Report Podcast brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton and the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street. It is April 3rd, episode 225 of this distinguished podcast. It's Monday, but I've not had to use my AK, and Columbus Crew SC sits atop the Eastern Conference standing, so it is a good day. My name is Bart Logan. We've got some familiar faces with us again joining this week. Patrick Murphy leading us off. Smurf, did you stay up for WrestleMania last night?
I did.
Nice, nice. Good to hear. I know that was a late one. Also joining us, someone we can turn to, someone who'll always be there and always understand. It's Alex Stanek. Alex, how are things?
Not too bad, not too bad.
Good to hear, good to hear. Rejoining after a two-week, we'll call it an international break, it is Chris Landis. Chris, mad about anything?
Yeah, the reason for my two-week international break, I wasn't being shown enough adulation and love on Twitter, so I had to punish them with a Chrisless podcast for 2 weeks. So my fan club got the proper amount of tweets to me, so I've decided to grace the presence this week, so you're welcome.
That's his presence is a president. And while filling in, you know, while Chris was out, we brought in Ralph Schudel on a loan with an option to buy. And despite all of our protests, and I mean everyone was against this idea, ownership has decided to exercise that option. And he's now officially part of the team. Ralph, welcome aboard. But remember, you're still the rookie, so you still have to get the water whenever we have a live show.
Well, happy to be here. Thank you guys for, you know, fully bringing me on. I'd like to thank Mr. Precourt, and you won't be sorry.
Well, we better not be, Ralph. We better not be. And then we still have Sam Fahmy working the boards, making sure we read. I am talking at a stable level, and I believe he's still winning against the law. Is that still the case, Sam?
According to most people, yes.
Good to hear. That's all that we're really care about. Well, we've got a lot to talk about from last week, and if you want to join the conversation, again, it's pre-recorded, so you can't really, except you can bug us during the week, hit us up, or in Ralph's case, you can also claim your free beer. If you hit us up on twitter.com, just use @MassiveReport, use the hashtag MRPod, you can tag _Pat_Murphy, @AlexStanek, @ChrisLandis with a K, @Schudel _Ralph. But lots to talk about this week, breaking down Saturday's 2-0 clean sheet win over the Orlando City Disney Lion Kings, looking at some of the top performers from the game, Iraki Ronaldo. We'll look at some of the other big news from the week, big-time trade between the hometown team and Vancouver, as Tony Chani was sent with a bundle of Don Garber bucks to the Whitecaps, and in return, Columbus Crew SC getting money. Kakuta Mane, big trade to talk about. We'll look at some of the other big performers from last week, too. The likelihood of Alex Crenali pitching in the looking really, really good in these first couple games that we've seen him. And, of course, we'll also preview next week's road match in Bridgeview, Illinois. But first, Pat Murphy, take us back to kickoff yesterday on Saturday, and let's quick recap that 2-0 win.
Yeah, it's good to be talking about a third win in a row, because that hasn't happened since the end of 2014, which is really hard to believe. You know, I guess you don't see three-game winning streaks a lot in Major League Soccer, but you know, still this team did make a run to MLS Cup in 2015 and wasn't able to do that. So nice that we're doing that. It got off to a pretty quick start. Justin Merrim getting a goal early on a nice long ball from Artur after he won it back in his own half. And then it was Merrim again in the second half. Similar kind of play with Higuain kind of intercepting slash breaking up a pass and turns the other way, takes it downfield, finds Merrim. Two goals with either foot for Justin, which is always nice to see. Didn't have the chance to cut in on that right on the first goal as our Colin Johnson broke down today on the site. You can take a look at that. Pretty good stuff from him. But yeah, a good performance offensively, I think. There were some times in the second half where things kind of got away from the team. It almost reminded me of the Chicago game where Chicago came out and pressed pretty high and kind of threw Columbus off their game a little bit. But I thought they responded much better here, were better defensively, didn't allow that goal, and were able to get out on the break and get that second goal, which guaranteed the win. And, you know, another shutout, 2-3 games. So, you know, not everything was perfect about it, but sometimes you just have to find a way to win games, and they did that on Saturday.
And definitely encouraging thing to see. And, of course, one of the questions throughout the week was, would Jonathan Mensah be able to play after he got that late hit from Diego Valeri last weekend? A little bit of a question mark. At the end of the day, the starting 11 comes out. It's Alex Crenali in here. And you look at the guys he's been tested against in these first couple weeks, and we'll talk probably a little bit more about those. But he comes in and fills in again admirably along the back line, Chris. And I think we've got to be pretty excited about what we've seen from him and just the back line in general over this 3-week span.
Yeah, it's been a pleasant surprise. I think Crenali has stepped in, and he doesn't look like a rookie. He looks like, you know, ready for prime time, to use a cliche. It's obviously a great problem to have for Greg Berhalter, because you've got, you know, your two starters, Mensah and Ness, you know, kind of undisputed starters at this point. Then you brought in Josh Williams to be that kind of veteran MLS presence, and you had the two young guys, Lawless and Crenali. And now Crenali's kind of thrown that into disarray, and he's, you know, you can make a legitimate argument of him being the third guy and potentially even pushing for a starting job. So the whole defense has been doing their bit really well. Will Trapp and Artur have been kind of combining for the midfield defensive duties in a really, really great way. Artur, by the way, can we talk about how great of a game he had on Saturday? I was blown away. No secret that I have not been high on Artur his first few appearances, but if that's the player we're going to see week in, week out for Crew SC, the guy's going to be a star. He looked like a totally transformed player. The role he was asked to play seemed to suit him spectacularly. His range of vision looked amazing, and I was just blown away by how good he looked. And honestly, I was blown away by the performance, because it wasn't a great performance. This team is not playing their best soccer. This team is not playing great soccer, but they're winning and they're getting results. And I think that the fact that they're getting these results at this point early on in the season, playing the kind of soccer they are, where they're not putting it together for 90 minutes. We're seeing a good 45 here. We're seeing a good 60 minutes offensively, and then the down spell. We're not seeing a full, complete game out of this team yet, and they're still getting results. If this team starts putting it together consistently week in, week out for 90 minutes offensively and defensively, this could be a legitimate contender, and that's not what I was expecting this season.
Chris, was that you buying into hype?
No, it was me seeing the kid play well for myself and going, oh yeah, he might actually have this.
I meant the team. Are you buying
followers.
Are you buying into the hype of the team? I feel like you're coming our way.
Maybe
it's
a little.
It's time, Chris.
I think,
come over to the light side.
I refuse. No. I think the fact that the team is getting the results and not playing great is really, really encouraging. But until they start playing consistently, like, there still hasn't been. There are these moments, like Murph alluded to. There was that little down spell where they seem to be losing control a little bit. So it's not consistent, but I think I'm seeing the potential there that maybe I didn't see at the start of the season, and a lot of people, you know, didn't see, and I disagreed with the people who were seeing it. So I'm definitely starting to come around, and I think that the ceiling on this team is probably a lot higher than I thought it was.
So you think that the Columbus Crew have a chance at winning the World Cup?
I'm not going to dignify that with a response. I'm a journalist. I'm not going to dignify that with a response.
Well, I'm not a journalist, Bart, so I will dignify that with a response, and I think that we are favorites to win the World Cup. Brazil's probably second, followed by the Chicago Fire, now that they have signed Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Bridgeview.
Big pickup for them.
Didn't Brazil bow out of the World Cup with, like, the worst performance ever? I don't think they can be favorites for anything right now.
Didn't they lose to Germany, like, in some sort of shocking result? But that was knockout stages,
like,
right?
37-0 or something.
It was 7-1. I mean, it wasn't 37.
In soccer, that's 37-0.
If Artur
it's
was
Faroe
playing
Islands and San Marino in the final, by the way.
If Artur was playing, it would have been 8-7, and they would have won, because he would have been bossing that thing. My take on the game is I think we played poorly, but we still looked good. And that is very encouraging, as others have kind of alluded to. One thing I am kind of curious to see is I have to think that this form from Merrim is going to stop at some point, and how we cope with that is going to be something that's very interesting. Merrim is in the form of his career, and he looks like an absolutely incredible player, somebody who is playing way above kind of Major League Soccer levels. If that falls off at some point, then we might struggle to find goals. We might see more draws. But if he can keep producing the way he has been producing, and our defense can keep playing the way it's been playing, I think this could be a really incredible season. I was really, really impressed with the defense again this week. I thought not only did Crenali do a good job, but again, Ness was kind of this silent presence that he just did everything that you expect him to do without making a big fuss about anything. I thought Will Trapp had an amazing game. I think he's getting much better at kind of tackling, which has in the past been a little bit of maybe a weak spot for him. And I thought, again, Artur, fantastic. So as long as we can keep that defensive rigidity, can prevent other teams from scoring on us, then you really only need one goal. And if you have wingers that are out of form like we saw last season, it's not the end of the world like it was last season. So everything's kind of falling into place for us right now. It's still early days. They still haven't played that many games. But 3 games in a row now where we have seen really solid performances from this team. And we're still dealing with injuries. I mean, we didn't have Jonathan Mensah. We didn't have one of our starting center backs. And as we've talked about on previous podcasts, if you're missing a center back in the system that Berhalter plays, it can be really problematic. And so having everything kind of working together and having this depth in these key positions, I think we're really set up for a really, really good season. And Kakuta Mane, if one of these wingers goes out of form, you have him. You can play him on the wing if you want to. You can play him as a second striker if you go 3-5-2. He offers you a lot of versatility. So I'm really, really encouraged by what we've seen early on. Still too early to kind of get the banners out and say, you know, MLS Cup, we're coming for you. But I'm really looking forward to seeing what this team can produce over the next coming weeks and months.
And I have to jump on a point that Chris said, and I know this is Chris and I's first show together, but I tend to agree with him in this regard, and that being the team hasn't been, you know, with a credible amount of sex appeal. They haven't played too much, you know, the best style of soccer, but they've done what they've needed to do in key situations. They were able to, you know, contain Kyle Larin, contain Rivas, contain Adi. You know, everybody understands their role and they know what's asked of them. So they make sure that they are going through and covering their guys. And last year that was kind of lost in translation. It looked like a lot of people didn't know who they needed to be on or who they needed to mark at all or anything like that. The big thing that I think is helping Crenali, if we switch to the back line, is I still believe him and Stefan have incredible chemistry together. And that comes from Maryland. I think that Stefan holds the key to Alex Crenali. I think if you're going to compare, and I know we'll touch on this more than likely later in the show, you know, I think Crenali and Stefan understand each other from having past experience. I think Mensah is still trying to figure out who this goalkeeper is, and, you know, they're still trying to get their relationship together. But, it, you know, it really doesn't matter how you do it. As long as you put one more on the board than the opposition, it, you know, it's exciting to watch this team. And like you guys are all touching on, if this is what we're doing, dinged up, lacking personnel, and so on and so forth, it seems like it's going to be quite an exciting season. And I mean, Artur, I was marveling at his play on Saturday, just the way he was going sideline to sideline. And I thought there was absolutely no way that he could keep that pace going for the whole 90 minutes, but somehow he did. I mean, that kid is, I'm very impressed with him.
Ralph, you mentioned the chemistry with Crenali and Stefan. And I think one other thing that you could add to that is this chemistry that Alex had a chance to form with the entire back line. You know, Jonathan didn't come in until pretty late in the preseason. The only guy he's ever played with before was Harrison Offal. I think we've seen bits and pieces of what the coaching staff saw in Jonathan, but I certainly don't think we've seen the whole package yet. And I think, you know, I certainly agree that the chemistry between Alex and Zach is definitely there. But, you know, the fact that they were able to all go down to Brazil together, where it was soccer all the time, I think that really helps a new back line work together. And even seeing some, we'll talk on this and when we get to the scrimmage from yesterday, but watching those guys play, you know, the Josh Williams and Lalas of the world play together, you know, you can see that's all started to form, whereas I think Jonathan's still trying to figure some of that out.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Absolutely.
And you know, you look at this team and it's a lot of new faces, and it seems like it's a lot of new faces every week almost. I mean, I don't believe that Greg Berhalter has trotted out the same starting 11, certainly not in consecutive games, and some of that's been injuries, international duty. But for them to be getting these results with this rotating cast, you're getting a chance to see that depth in some of these guys that are getting, in the case of Crenali, I mean, big-time tests, as you mentioned, Ralph, guys like Kyle Larin, like Audie, that he's passed against. But everyone's getting this chance to get these, build this chemistry. But it's a little bit, Chris, does it become an issue for a team if you've got this rotating cast of characters come in that they can't really build chemistry?
I don't think it's an issue. It's a good problem to have. I think you've seen with different clubs across the world and even within MLS, you see rotation is good to a degree, and I don't think Berhalter in his time here has shown that he's too much of a tinker man. So I think that the changes that are being made are, I don't want to say forced or enforced, but almost enforced, almost required. You know, he's not changing things just to change things. I think getting different players in is a byproduct of that. I don't think it's necessarily a goal that he has to change the personnel each game. Obviously, in his time, Berhalter has shown he likes sticking with personnel when he can. So I don't think it's a danger of over-rotating because it's just not Berhalter's way. But that being said, we all coming into the season kind of thought that we were going to see the traditional Berhalter ram it down your throat, this is what we do, try to stop us, which has been his MO throughout his time here. And game in, game out, he's throwing something different in there, tactically speaking. It's a tweak here, something subtle there, pardon me. It's not necessarily a giant switch like we saw in DC, where it's a formation switch, but I know last week you guys covered it with Harrison Offal being tucked in. We talked about it on match day, Nathaniel and I did. You know, you had Harrison Offal playing tucked in as a third midfielder. This week you're seeing something a little different with the way, you know, since he wasn't tucking in, Finley was allowed to do his thing more. Game in, game out, we're seeing small switches from Berhalter in a way that we didn't necessarily see in previous years. And I think that shows, A, he believes that this squad is capable of pulling these off, or maybe in previous years he thought there were some weak links that weren't necessarily able to do it. And B, he knows that we're gonna knock you down with how we play wasn't working. I think he saw that. I think a lot of us, at least me, I am fully capable of admitting it. I thought he wasn't going to see that. I thought he believed in his system too much and just wasn't going to change. And I've been wrong about that. And I'm very happy to see it because I think it's effective. These little changes, these little tweaks, you know, Finley staying wider one game, cutting inside more the next. You know, Artur has been asked to do different things game in, game out. I think this past week it suited him much more than in previous matches because he wasn't being forced to kind of hover and recycle. He was allowed to roam sideline to sideline, as Ralph said. You know, he wasn't being forced in that kind of recyclable role. So these different changes, these little tweaks, I think, are a sign that Berhalter knows it needs to happen now, and I think he realizes that just doing it the same way each match, it wasn't working, and that was part of the problem, and I think it's really encouraging to see.
I think you touched on a lot of good stuff there, Chris, because we have, and you know, you even go back to the first two games, which obviously didn't go as well as they wanted, and I think the Chicago game was probably the most similar to what we've expected, and then the first half of this Orlando game, in terms of that traditional, you know, Will dropping into the back line. And he did that in Houston, but, you know, I think they tried a few different things against Houston, and it didn't work as well, especially after they gave up that very early goal. But, yeah, I think part of what you're seeing is maybe not a lack of stubbornness, but a learning from Greg Berhalter. You know, we forget that these guys, a lot of these MLS coaches that come in from being players, are still pretty young. And, you know, while a lot of them worked with some very high-profile coaches, Bruce Arena in the case of Berhalter, just to name one, you know, they have to kind of figure it out on their own. And while he didn't have great success over in Europe, after he did that, he moved around, or he bounced around a little bit, taking in, you know, different clubs over there, some big-time clubs. Then he ends up coming here. He has a philosophy. He wants to stick to it. He has two seasons that work pretty well in terms of the final results when you look at the end of the year, making the playoffs for the first time. And then last year didn't go as well as they wanted. And you can talk about injuries, you can talk about whatnot, but, you know, he's admitted that he learned a lot from that season and kind of the failure of last season. And, you know, I'm sure, like Chris said, that he's realizing it needs to happen now. They've certainly got the talent. They've proven that they can make runs to MLS Cup with this, you know, somewhat diminished now, but still the same kind of core of players. And I think that, you know, the tweaks, and there's always been tweaks, they, you know, may not have been as obvious, or they may not have worked as well, but I think that, you know, you're seeing some pretty obvious things that are surprising the opponent, and, you know, it's working. And even this past week, while they didn't change too much tactically from what they traditionally like to do, when Orlando started pressing them high in the second half, they kind of gave up on necessarily playing out of the back. They didn't even line up surrounding the box, the center backs, like they usually do on goal kicks. Instead, Zach Steffen just kicked it long. Nikolai Ness had a few just clearances just to get it away. And I thought that was, you know, a sign that, hey, we've got to lock it down defensively, and that means gets the ball out of there.
Brilliant points, Pat, as always. You know, I tend to think with Berhalter, I think he sees the writing on the wall that he needs to win, and he needs to win now. The big thing with him that drove me absolutely mad through 2016 was that, like you guys all said, he didn't seem to be making enough tweaks. It was the same system. We were going to come out, we were going to punch you in the face, and basically we're just going to ram the ball, cross it over. And the big adjustment where it was most noticeable was when we lost Kai, because you could tell that they were still trying to play it in the air. They were trying to play it to an aerial presence that they did not have. And as we've touched on the show numerous times, is that Ola Kamara really is successful when the ball's at his feet. So, you know, it's been nice to see so far this season that Berhalter's identified the issues that have been sitting there and changing these tactics, like you guys have said, with these subtle tweaks. And it almost seems like we're getting a youth movement also, too, obviously, with Nico Ness, Mbappe, you know, Krenali, Artur. And it seems that there was apprehension from Berhalter to play players like Kristen Steindorsen or Emil Larsson or anybody that he transferred in. He almost didn't trust them, it felt like, at points. But, you know, it seems like he's definitely a little bit more open and that the best player is going to get time to play. One other point that I want to add on there. I'm off the Ethan Finley bandwagon. I saw, you know, I haven't seen enough for him this season to really excite me. So the fact that Kakuta is here now with us, I really would like to see him try at least a game at Ethan's role, just to see how he performs.
Ralph, for the first time on your podcast history, I strongly disagree with you. I thought Ethan was fantastic in this game. He didn't have the direct contribution, you know, of Justin Marimore stuff that we saw of him in the past, but he was making their left side, especially in the first half, he was getting in behind. There was only one play that seemed to be off between him and Federico, and I know Chris has touched upon that before, but just getting in behind their defense, and a lot of times he didn't get the ball, but he was making them work, and you know, that's a left side that's been pretty good for Orlando defensively. And then the second half, he was much more defensive focused, I thought. You know, he was on the farther side of the field, so I didn't see him as much up close, but you know, I think he's learning how to affect games in other ways, whereas before he had to have the ball, had to be getting in behind. And you know, Chris, you mentioned him playing wider a couple weeks ago. You know, that was a game where he was a non-factor on the ball because he just was too far wide. And but that was tactically what they wanted. They wanted to pull the back line apart. And you saw, I think, on the goal that Kamara scored, the volley, how they're kind of stretched at the back line width-wise. You can play a long through ball over the top, and he's got the ability to go get it and go score. So I think they're doing things with Ethan that aren't necessarily the same kind of things he's done before, which I think is interesting. I'm not saying he's playing great by any stretch, but I did think at least the first half of this game, he was doing what they wanted to and working that left side of the defense pretty hard.
And I would agree with you on that too, Pat. It's just, you know, I'm so used to seeing him with the ball at his feet. It's just a lot of those runs with Toya and Spectre, you know, he was tormenting them, but I was just kind of, I've just been really critical with his on the ball movement because it seems like anytime he gets into the 18, you know what he's going to do. He's never going to shoot. He's going to take it to the absolute last second that he can and then try to cross the ball over.
I kind of agree with that, but I also think that might be what he's being told to do with the ball. I think one thing that always impresses me about Ethan Finley is his work rate. And he will just by his effort wear down a defense. And I do think what you were talking about earlier about how last season we didn't make enough tweaks and how our offensive play was very kind of stagnant because it was basically just wingers crossing the ball in. I think a lot of that had to do with the form of our wingers themselves. You know, if we had Justin Merriman, the kind of form he's in right now last season, defenders, as Pat was talking about, they would have had to close him down quickly. It would have stretched the defense out. Crosses would have been more effective. You could have played through the middle more because a guy would have had to, you know, proactively kind of go to Merriman. Whereas basically last season they said, yeah, sure, you want to cross it in, that's fine. We got four guys in the box. Have at it. Try us. And it didn't work. With Merriman form, it opens up a lot of opportunities for a lot of players. And I think Finley is improving slowly. I, like Patrick, I thought he had a better game, but I still don't think he's in the form he needs to be in. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Mane, what kind of form he's in, what kind of condition he's in, how long it's going to take him to kind of learn Berhalter's system, because it is a pretty complicated system. So I would hope that Finley would still be starting for at least the next month or two. Let Mane kind of get settled in here before we see a whole lot of him as a starter anyway.
But I think they need to play more balls to Ethan's head. That seemed to be really effective in game one.
I also liked the kind of interplay between Finley and when you would see Higuain come out wide. You would see, you know, you'd basically have two people on their left back, and it was a really kind of interesting dynamic. Because if Finley had the ball, you could see Higuain go past and overlap the run, and vice versa. And I thought that was really effective. And having Merriman in such form, you know, it allows Higuain to kind of double up on that side, because then you can switch play if you need to, and then you have Merriman basically one-on-one with the right back, which is what he wants to be doing anyway. So the whole kind of interplay between the offense, the right players are in the right form that we need to have them be in right now. I think it's really encouraging, and you know, yeah, I mean, if we can figure out something to do on that right wing, whether it's Finley continuing to improve or Kakuta Mane, which we're going to talk about soon, I think we could have a really strong offense as well as having a really kind of solid defense.
Yeah, the one thing about Finley, and Pat kind of alluded to this earlier, Berhalter's really happy with how Finley is playing, because Finley's been one of the guys who has been tasked the most with changing his role week in, week out, like we were talking about. I think he and Artur are probably the two who have had the most variance in how they've been asked to play. That being said, they're having some moments that Finley just hasn't been on. And Pat alluded to the play I was very, very upset about a couple weeks ago, where he just couldn't read the play quick enough, and Higuain's perfect through ball was left unfulfilled because Finley was kind of lollygagging. But I think we might need to slow the roll here on the Mane straight into the starting 11 for Finley, because it's not a like-for-like replacement. We talked about this pretty in-depth on Massive Match Day, which everyone should be listening to because it's great. He's not a like-for-like player, like-for-like swap for Ethan Finley. You know, when Cedric was here, he was a pretty similar player to Ethan Finley. It was easy to kind of interchange them and kind of drop the other one in if somebody wasn't playing well. Mane, he plays his forward. He can play wide. He's a little different style of player, and it's a style of player that Kruse don't necessarily have right now. And so the assumption a lot of fans seem to be making, and even you know, some of the comments here today, is that Ethan's going to be pulled and Mane's going to slot right in. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I don't know what that would do to the balance of the team, because as we were talking, these switches, you know, week in, week out, these subtle little tweaks, dropping a new element into that lineup on top of everything, you know, you're going to want to put Mane in where he knows what his role is. You know, he knows what he's going to be asked to do for a couple week, a day here, you know, a game here, a game in, without, you don't want to throw too much at him, basically, as Pat said, or maybe it was Alex, sorry, Berhalter's system is pretty complicated. Players are asked to perform different functions at different times. So the idea that you're going to take this new arrival, this young arrival, and drop him into a role where Ethan Finley's being asked to do different things game in, game out, sometimes more offensive orientated, sometimes more defensively, it's a big ask, and I think it's something we need to kind of slow the roll on a little here.
I think a big ask, yes, but it's also, this was a big boy trade that Greg Berhalter made. We like it or not, obviously, in looking at it, Tony Chani going to Vancouver, $225,000 in targeted allocation money, $75,000 general allocation money, and then also some strings attached, because both Mane is in the final year of a contract, so if he were to be dealt, who is in the last year, so if he signs a new contract with Columbus, Vancouver also gets our first overall pick, and if he is traded by Columbus before the 31st of December 2018, Vancouver will retain a percentage of whatever that future transfer fee is. So this is someone that you've invested a lot in getting, and Tony Chani, for obviously he was out of favor with Greg Berhalter's, for Greg Berhalter, he obviously was rating Abu and Archer above him, but he's still a player that hadn't seen, even made it into the 18 through the first 4 weeks of the season, and you still, granted, there is the, you know, target allocation, Don Garber fun bucks that went with it, but you picked up a big player in Mane. Mane's got 22 goals at age 22. Justin Miram just scored his 25th and 26th of his career this past weekend. This is a guy who's scored goals, and if you're not trading for him to play him, then what are you playing him for? Or what'd you trade it for?
Well, I think he's going to get more playing time than Chani, I think is what it boils down to. Chani was not going to find the starting 11 with the kind of depth that we have. I mean, he was fighting Abu for a bench spot, basically. And he was on, $350,000 a season? He was taking up a huge amount of cap room, and he just wasn't going to play. So it was a difficult situation for him to be in, and as we've talked about basically since preseason, the natural move was to trade him for a versatile attacking player, somebody who can play forward especially. And I think they've got that in Kakuta Mane. I really think this is a very, very talented young player, one of the most talented young players in Major League Soccer, in my opinion, and somebody who offers Crew SC a little bit of a plan B. Not only does he kind of fit in naturally with the 3-5-2 style, if you decide to go that way, where you can have kind of a target forward who can just either head the ball in or finish it with his feet, kind of a poaching style like Ola Kamara. And then you have that second striker who can make runs off of the shoulder of the main forward. He offers you that, but he also offers you just another style of forward for specific matchups if you want to play with the system that we've seen forever where you have the one striker and the wingers. We have had kind of this kind of slow hold-up style forward for a long time, Kai Kamara and now Ola Kamara. Kakuta Mane is really fast. He's like Oduro fast. And so he offers you the ability to sit deeper into counterattack in a way that maybe we wouldn't be able to do in certain circumstances. So if we have a lead, we can sit deep. We can, you know, have everybody get back, have 10 men behind the ball, have Mane forward, and you can just, you know, spray the ball to him and hope he can get behind the back line. So there's a lot of upside to this trade and very little downside because you're essentially losing a very good player who was not going to play anyway, and you're getting somebody who's young, who's talented, and who fits the needs of the system and potentially other systems that you want to play.
Well, and I'm interested to see, we talked, Chris, you mentioned, you know, not rushing him into the system, and I think that's a fair point, but I think why people are excited are A, the amount that they gave up for him, B, that he's young, C, that he's new, and D, Greg Berhalter said he expects him to have an immediate impact. And the last guy he said that about was Arthur, and you know, he played week one and started the rest of the games. I don't think that he plans on doing that with Kakuta Mane necessarily, but I do think we're going to see him in some fashion rather quickly. You know, he talked about, as Alex said, that he could play, you know, kind of any of these four positions across the front, the fourth being a kind of second striker, not necessarily how Higuain plays, but as an actual second striker. And, you know, so that does give them diversity. It gives them a chance to bring a spark off the bench, whether it's him, Justin Merrim, Ethan Finley. It also gives them some depth that while they've had other guys that play those positions in recent years, I don't know if they've had a guy that has proven it like he has in MLS. You know, I know there's questions about his recent form and his consistency, but you know, as Bart mentioned, at 22 years old, he's got 22 goals in MLS, which is impressive. And you know, I think that it's certainly a trade with a lot of good potential. You know, the drawback, only drawback I can see is, you know, if he ends up leaving in the summer and you don't get as much for him as you'd like. But you know, Greg's kind of response to that was, you know, we're looking at him right now. We'll deal with contract and stuff. He said soon, but you know, at a later date. And I think that they're going to look to try and make him some kind of impact player. Just the role is not yet clear.
And I think it's a lot like an investment, basically, what you guys have all said, is that, you know, he's in his prime. And then something I wanted to touch with the article that we wrote this week on massivereport.com was that this kid has some U.S. men's national team promise as well, too. He's got his citizenship in January, coming over from Gambia, I believe, and he's trying to get the paperwork going there. But I think a lot of Crew fans are very excited to see that we may get another national teamer on the team, you know, not just your Will Trapp or your Ethan Finley, but, you know, there may be another guy that you can pull for when the international break comes along.
Certainly, although Will Trapp right now is losing favor on the national team for 35-year-old guys, but that's probably has to do with Bruce Arena knowing that he needs to get points right now for this team, that the U.S. team, to have a chance at making it to the World Cup. So a deal, a really big deal. But the other thing about it that I think is you just competition. And I'm going to be perfectly content if you've got Kakuta Mane and Ethan Finley and Justin Merrim punching it out for two spots on the field, because that sort of competition in training. I mean, I don't know who wrote it last week, but the thought that the acquisition of Mane might have helped propel Justin Merrim, lit that little fire that resulted in those two goals that we saw. And so with that pressure of a player like Mane, who's got, you know, Cedric was one thing, but Mane, again, proven goal-scoring record, I think it's a little bit means there's a shorter leash for guys, but I think ultimately that's going to help out the team.
Yeah, depth, and, you know, we started off by talking about how the tweaks in the system, you know, he provides a different type of match, you know, a different type of player for certain matchups that now Greg can tinker with and exploit. You know, teams are going to be wondering, okay, who are they going to go with on the wings? I think for a while under Greg, the starting lineup was the starting lineup, and you know, it's gonna be interesting to see if, you know, what kind of roles they like to use him in, how it changes maybe some other roles. Maybe, you know, certain players don't have to do as much. You know, I think we talked last year at times, like, and we talked about it 2 years ago with Kai, like, what happens if the forward goes down up top? You know, you don't have, I mean, Adam John did okay last year, but I don't think anyone is expecting him to be a week in, week out starting forward. Well, now you have a guy with some experience playing that position and can do some of the similar things Ola can do, you know, running in behind defenses and timing runs and whatnot.
Question for you guys real quick, and I know we're going to get ready to parlay and change into something completely different, though. Do you think, a couple weeks ago we were talking about a super sub, do you think that Mane or whoever is, you know, interchange out your Ethan Finleys or whatnot, do you think this finally gives us the super sub that we might have been looking for the whole season?
I don't think it's that simple. I think that it's going to be a situational kind of swap in, swap out, as Berhalter's kind of shown this year. He's being much more obvious about how intricate his game plans are. He's making it a little more upfront that he's game planning for specific teams as opposed to throwing his A game out there and saying, come get us. So I don't think it's going to be as simple as this guy's our super sub, this guy's our starter. I think, you know, on any given day against any given opposition, depending on matchups, depending on injuries, depending on, you know, if we have two or three games in the span of 10, 14 days, whatever, I think you're going to see different variations. And I think it's an overly simplistic idea that Berhalter would resort to just one guy being a super sub, because that's just not how he operates in general and specifically this year.
So Dante Washington's place in crew lore is the greatest super sub of all time, still safe for the time being. Looking at some of the other subs that did get in some action, including Kakuta Mane, during a scrimmage earlier this week with Michigan State. And Smurf, I believe you had the chance to watch that game. So what did you see from Mane and some of the other guys who are, I mean, looks like this is a team, again, with much better depth than maybe we even realized coming into the season now?
Yeah, I was the game, and I thought it was, you know, for some of these scrimmages can be kind of dull. You know, the college team comes out trying to prove something. The crew's playing backup players that maybe aren't as used to playing with each other. But this game looked really good. You know, other than Nico Hansen and Adam John, I believe everybody was guys who didn't play the night before, so, you know, fully fit. They only had one sub in Dilly Duca, who came on at halftime for Mane. Good to see him back, because he's been battling injuries. So, you know, the Mane thing, I know, is what everyone wants to talk about, and he looked good. I mean, you could tell that he hadn't worked with the team much. There were some miscues and things like that, but played on the right side, had a nice, you know, kind of no-look leave on a pass that found Connor Maloney on an overlap that led to the first goal from Adam John. So, you know, a good sign there that he's reading the situations accurately and, you know, combining a little bit. But got on the ball, scored a goal, which was a good shot from outside the box after a pretty good run from Waylon Francis, who I thought was really impressive in this game. But the keeper probably should have held it, kind of bobbled it, and it ended up like squirting through his fingers. So, you know, it all counts the same. I don't think anyone would credit that as an own goal, but, you know, nice to see him taking a shot on. You know, didn't seem hesitant with the ball at his feet. So, you know, on the right side, I don't know if that's where he's most comfortable. I think a lot of his time in Vancouver, was played on the left, coming in onto his right foot, but looked good. As I mentioned, Waylon played really well. Connor Maloney, I thought, played well. Nico Hansen got in dangerous positions. He scored the other goal. You know, so I think, you know, take it with a grain of salt because they're playing Michigan State, a college team, in their spring season. But I think that they, you know, the depth here is showing. Lalas Abubakar, another guy who looked really good, just winning balls in the air, right place, right time. He's becoming more confident in himself in the professional game. You know, it's fun to see these guys, the youth of this team, kind of developing, because we haven't had a lot of that, as we mentioned before. But a 3-0 win against a decent Big Ten team, probably not a bad sign for the reserve side.
Definitely good to see, and good to see those guys keeping getting some work, even when they're not necessarily getting in the lineup. Look at some of the other games. Did anyone catch any of the other games this past week? And obviously, standings right now, Columbus Crew and Portland at the top of the supporter shield. Of course, Bridgeview had the debut of Bastian Schweinsteiger, and I think to the surprise of many, he actually contributed for Bridgeview as they were able to... I missed their game. I just saw that he scored. But looking at the rest of the standings, you've got Atlanta trailing Columbus, although they have a game in hand, as does New York, Red Bulls, and City. So both of those teams with games in hand but trailing by a couple points. Chicago, I believe, got a draw last weekend. Fellas, what do you think looking at just the lineups throughout MLS right now? We're looking at about a seventh of the way through the season.
Minnesota, big win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, their first win of the season. Which...
And Mohamed Saeed traded, so we will have to actually divert, plan a new itinerary so we can pick him up in Colorado.
I think we can leave him there for the time being, at least. I'm going to see if I can get my deposit back on that helicopter. I don't know. But finally find one, and then he gets traded. It's pretty rough, but what can you do? I watched the Portland-New England game instead of WrestleMania. I think everybody else in my timeline was watching professional wrestling, but...
I watched both at the same time. Get with it, man.
Nice, nice. The Portland-New England game was probably even worse than professional wrestling, even if you don't like professional wrestling. It was a really terrible game. The one highlight for me was just paying attention to all of the stuff Kai Kamara was not doing for New England. He was absolutely terrible for them. I still don't understand what he does for New England. Every time I watch them, I feel like they need a different kind of striker in there. And so they kind of have two people who are trying to do the exact same thing, and Kai's just kind of hanging out. It was a really weird game, but Portland choked towards the end of the game and gave up the goal. It was a 1-1 final score. And I always enjoy seeing Portland not win at home so that I can make lots of jokes about how their fans should have cheered louder and should have made more TIFO and all that good stuff. But not a great advertisement for Major League Soccer. It was pretty poor.
But you mentioned Schweinsteiger scoring his first goal. I think from all accounts, he made a pretty big impact on the game. Good passing, through balls, things like that. You know, obviously this is a guy who's played in World Cups, won pretty much everything you can at the top level. So coming into MLS, I expect him to do these things. My big question with him is, can he stay healthy, which has been his problems before he left Bayern towards the end of his career, his entire time at Manchester United. You know, he's just getting up there in age, and I know he's not that old, but people's bodies kind of work different ways, and I think his has started to break down a little earlier. MLS is obviously a different level, but still a physical league, a lot of travel that maybe he didn't have to do as much, you know, bouncing around Germany or England. So I'll be interested to see just how he responds to that. You know, a guy that I think is fairly likable, so I think most fans, whether you're a Fire fan or not, would like for the league to see him do well. But, a big impact in the first game. And then I think it's interesting, going back to Friday night's games, Kansas City and Toronto, and then Seattle and Atlanta, you know, they put these games on Friday nights on Fox Sports 1, I believe is what it was, and you get 2-0-0 draws. And not that there weren't chances in there, but I don't know if that's the best, A, time slots for MLS matches, and B, you know, two games that you probably expected some goals to end in both scoreless draws probably doesn't help turn out more people next week for Friday soccer on national television.
Yeah, I was probably just there looking for anything to go against the final four games. Was it women's Friday night and then men's Saturday?
Yeah, women's final four. But that might have been that might have gotten more ratings.
Hey, the Lady Gamecocks, I gotta give it to them. And you look at it's gonna be interesting watching Bastian Schweinsteiger for this Chicago team. Obviously, it's sort of reminiscent of when David Beckham came over, or in more recent years, a Steven Gerrard or Frank Lampard. But I think he's going to be relied on to produce more offense. I know I'm looking at the way they lined up on in that draw on Saturday, 2-2 draw, and it looked like they had him on the outside for middle three. But I've read a little bit that he's going to be expected to play in that 10 role, which is interesting, again, for a guy that you mentioned who's had injury issues. Certainly the speed isn't there as much, and hasn't really played in the 10. He was a winger, or outside midfielder when he was first coming up in Bayern, and then moved to that kind of central and deep-line playmaker. And so to get moved into that attacking role for the Chicago team, if he doesn't indeed play there, it'll be interesting to watch. Guys, what do you see as the biggest challenge for Crew SC this weekend in Bridgeview?
Well, you know, just to touch on Schweinsteiger real quick, it's kind of one of the dangers of these glamour signings, just to make a glamour signing, because it creates a total logjam for them in the center of the park. You know, you have the Brazilian kid, I can't remember his name. Juninho, thank you. And then you have the little ginger guy, McCarty. And, you know, that's a pretty solid center midfield pairing, you know, to begin with. And then you just kind of sign Schweinsteiger, and you're like, oh, well, figure it out. I think, obviously, Schweinsteiger is a level above either one of them, and he's obviously still got gas in the tank to give, especially at the MLS level. But trying to find where he's going to contribute and how he's going to contribute, it's going to take some tinkering, and you might well see one of those two players, McCarty or Juninho, possibly shuffle to the bench. Or there's going to be a lot of shuffling, and I think that's something Crew SC are going to be able to exploit this weekend. Possibly because, well, Juninho is going to be out again because he's afraid to play us, apparently. But Artur and Trapp are clicking, and that's one place where they're going to look to kind of exploit that. But as far as what Crew SC might struggle against, when we just kind of did this show before week one, and Alex was very high on the new striker Bridgeview have, and he definitely tested the back line at Moffray Stadium a little. There were a couple times where he was just offsides, and offside rather, my own pet peeve I almost just did there. He was offside a couple times, and it could have very easily been a real goal-scoring chance. So I think that the back four are going to have to be together. We saw them running an offside trap on a free kick this past week. But no matter who's in there, if it's Mensah, if it's Crignale, they're gonna need to be on point, because, you know, a few more weeks under their belts, this Bridgeview offense is probably going to be a little more on the same page. And there were a couple times in that first match that they could have been punished.
I think Akam is going to be kind of somebody to keep an eye on. He's somebody very dangerous. And then, yeah, Nikolic, we talked about when we played Chicago the first time. He's somebody who I still think he can mess with an MLS-level defense. Now, our defense is looking very, very solid. So whether or not he's a problem for us or not, only time will tell. I did want to talk a little bit about Bastian Schweinsteiger. When that deal was announced, there was a lot of kind of snickering from MLS commentators. A lot of kind of the big names were making jokes about it, saying, oh, they're going back to this retirement league stuff. Bastian Schweinsteiger is a very good player. And while he is older than some people might want Major League Soccer designated players to be. He is still incredibly talented. And when you look around the league at the players who are really making an impact and who have made an impact in recent years, a lot of them are kind of these cast-offs from European teams. I think you could make a strong case that the best player in Major League Soccer history was Robbie Keane. And he was somebody who was just basically being passed around by Tottenham Hotspur, trying to get loaned out to anybody who would take him before he came to Major League Soccer and started scoring goals for fun. You have Sebastian Giovinco, who is still, in my opinion, maybe the best player in Major League Soccer. He was not making the 18 for Juventus in Serie A in Italy, which is not a necessarily top-tier league. And so the fact that Bastian Schweinsteiger was on the bench for Manchester United, which is one of the most famous teams in the world with an incredibly expensive lineup, the fact that he's only on the bench is not a problem at all. You bring him to Major League Soccer and he's going to pass circles around your average midfield. And I think that's what we saw last week. I think he had a really big impact for Chicago. I think he has the potential to have that impact against Columbus. And he's somebody that I would watch very carefully. I would stick a man on him basically all the time. If there's not somebody who's, you know, 5 feet away from Schweinsteiger at any moment, I'm nervous. He's somebody who can create something from nothing. And there are very few players of that caliber in Major League Soccer. I'm pretty jealous of Chicago for this one. I'm scared a little bit.
Well, having been a United fan and seeing Schweinsteiger 4 or 5 times, you know, however much he played when he wasn't injured, I'm not too terribly scared of him. I still respect his game because he can create something out of nothing, but I don't think he's going to be asked to do a ton. I think against the grain a little bit, Alex, I think he was put in there as a marketing ploy to kind of put some butts in seats. I think he can still deliver. I just don't expect him to be too tremendously exciting. And another thing, too, that I like what Pat mentioned was the travel schedule for Major League Soccer. With, you know, you think he's played in Germany, you know, he's played Bundesliga, he's played Premier League, he's played World Cup games. But you think England and Germany are considerably smaller countries than the United States, and you don't have elevation changes, you don't have climate changes at all or anything like that. You know, who's to tell making the trip from Chicago out to Portland and then say they go Chicago to Seattle or L.A.? You know, it's a tough trek to make.
I think he was a marketing ploy in a lot of ways, in the sense that they signed him not just for his on-the-field ability, but also for what he does off the pitch, putting butts in seats, as you said. But I also think that they saw an opportunity to sign a really world-class player, to sign somebody who is automatically in the top 5 most talented players in the entire league. And when you have an opportunity like that and you can afford it and the player is willing to come and come to your city and play for you and seems motivated to perform on the pitch, I think you take that all the time. If somebody offered me Bastian Schweinsteiger today, to the Crew, I would take him in 2 seconds.
And, 100% agree with you.
And you find
over Artur?
Well, I don't think you necessarily play him over Artur. I think you do what Chicago's done, which is basically change your system. As Murph talked about earlier, they switched to a three-man midfield, and I think they can do that. I also think Schweinsteiger can play as a 10 if you want him to. He can kind of take an Higuain-style role, and he's still going to blow your average number 10 out of the water in Major League Soccer. I think that a lot of people who are mainly MLS fans or mainly EPL fans or whatever league you follow in Europe, if you don't watch both, it's sometimes hard to tell how big the gap is, but the gap is still really, really huge. And so you take your average kind of lower tier talent in Europe, your kind of bench player for a big team or your starter for a lower level team, that player is going to kill it in Major League Soccer. You can still, in Major League Soccer, you can go and you can sign a striker from the championship, and that striker from the championship, second division in England, can come over and dominate in this league. It's just kind of the way it is. We're not at that same level yet. We're improving. We're getting better. But you can still have players like Schweinsteiger come over here, treat it like it's sort of a vacation, but still really, really perform. I think we've seen it from Kaká. We've seen it from David Villa. We've seen it from Sebastian Giovinco. We've seen it from Robbie Keane. We've seen it for a lot of these kind of post-Beckham big-name stars. So I think he could have quite a career with Chicago, assuming he still puts in the effort that we've seen from him in the last, whatever, one game that he's been here.
One thing I wanted to bring up, and you kind of touched it on him a little bit earlier, Alex, was David Akon. Of course, we'll remember that he scored one of those goals for Bridgeview in that Christmas Day opener. But a teammate of Harrison Offal and Jonathan Mensah on the Ghanaian national team, and he almost it felt like he was kind of read that and sort of took advantage of knowing duck move he played on Jonathan to just lose him and get free to get that shot in. It looked like he kind of, you know, it's again, these are guys that he's trained with, and that familiarity could be a little bit dangerous for this Crew SC back line.
Yeah, comes, I think, always somebody that can cause problems. Not only does he have speed, but, you know, he's developed into a pretty good player off the ball for MLS level. He, you know, can run with the ball effectively. So he can do a variety of different things. I think to your point, Bart, that, you know, he knows the guys he's going to be going up against. I think conversely that they know him as well. So, you know, I think at that point in the game, he got the better of them. But, you know, I think it could go either way in terms of who handles who. I do like Akam, though. I've always thought he's a player who can cause issues. And, you know, we mentioned earlier about Ethan Finley running behind defenses, the potential for Kakuta Mane with his speed. So, you know, it's something you just have to be careful with. You know, Harrison Offal has some wheels, but as we saw in that game, you know, if he gets caught in the wrong place, it can be costly. And let's not forget that goal came because of a giveaway at midfield, which is something Columbus, you know, obviously try not to do because of, you know, the pressure it automatically puts on the back line.
It'll definitely be interesting to see what is going to come from this game coming up at Bridgeview. That is, I believe, a 3 o'clock start on Saturday.
Two o'clock.
So maybe 2 Central, 3 here. Who knows? We'll figure it out. You can watch that. Just head over to, I believe the Massive Report previews have all the information about where you can watch and when. Correct, guys?
That's a big 10-4, good buddy.
That's beautiful. That's what we like to see. So. With that, guys, let's go and look at, unless anyone else has something else for the preview, let's get some picks in here before we wrap this sucker up. Anyone?
Bueller? I'll go first. I think it's going to be 2-1 for Columbus. I really think Schweinsteiger could still cause a lot of problems, but I think we're the stronger team. We're in better form. I think we'll have enough. I think Chicago is going to probably score first. And then out from the mist in the late second half is going to emerge Radamel Falcao, and he's going to score a brace. I have to do it. It's superstition.
I'm going to kick you in the face, Alex, next time I see you. I'm going to kick you really, really hard in the face.
What's going to happen the day that happens?
Gets no, me every time.
I'm going to
kick myself in the face if that happens.
I guess it's worked.
We've won 3 in a row, so I had to do it. 2-1 is my prediction, though.
It's only crazy if it doesn't work.
You didn't make a Hansen reference this week, though.
Well, I made a Hansen reference, and then we had the draw, but I just kept doing Hansen references because it was fun. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
You're just a little tin soldier there, man.
Oh, look at this. Is that a deep cut? I'm not familiar with that. Okay.
Yeah. Deep cuts, yep. What are we talking about again? WrestleMania? Are we doing WrestleMania?
No, score predictions.
I'm gonna go with Alex. 2-1 Crew SC. I think the team's got something good going on here, and Bridgeview, I don't think are gelling quite the same way yet. Obviously, having a big star player just getting there, you know, doesn't necessarily breed that same level of confidence. I think it's gonna be similar to the first match of the year. I think I'm gonna disagree with Alex. I think Crew are gonna come out and score fairly early, first 25 minutes or so. I think Bridgeview will probably equalize sometime between halftime and the hour mark, and then I think Crew get a late goal. I don't think Mane will score. I think he'll probably come on as a sub and maybe be involved in the build-up or get the assist. I don't think he necessarily makes a debut goal, but I think that it'll be a late winner in Bridgeview for the Black and Gold.
I'm going to go with 2-2. I think that while we've seen progress made by this defensive line, I don't think all the problems are fixed. Kyle Aaron's definitely a good forward in this league, but he's kind of doing it alone. I mean, Rivas is a good playmaker, but without Kaká out there, he didn't scare me nearly as much as he would have with a guy who can really get him the ball in dangerous situations. Obviously, he's the only one who'd scored for Orlando, and they were able to neutralize him last week. And then the shutout against DC, you know, I think this defense is getting better. I think they're still going to get caught out at times just because of the nature of the system. I think Chicago figured out some good things to do against Columbus, and I think they'll try that early. It'll be how Columbus responds to whatever Chicago throws at them. And you know, like we talked about, Berhalter's been tweaking his system, so maybe Chicago has to adjust as well. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, I'm gonna go 2-2 with a road draw.
I guess that leaves me to chime in. Throw out everything you guys know from these teams. I agree with Pat. I think it'll be 2-2. They'll cancel each other out. You know, Schweinsteiger and McCarty will hold it down for midfield for Chicago. I expect Akam and Alvarez to cause a little bit of an issue. I think we'll keep Nikolic off the board. But I also expect Crew SC to kind of continue to build on the success. I just think these two teams really are just going to cancel each other out. Also, too, my Steck super sub, because it's not dead yet. Kakuta Mane. He'll score. He'll tie it up in the 70th minute. That's all I have to say.
And one thing I think that, you know, going to Bridgeview and getting a draw, I don't think is necessarily a terrible result. I mean, I don't, you know, you get 3 wins in a row to keep an undefeated streak alive, I think would be a good result. Obviously, it would be better if they could come home with 3 points, but, you know, that's not the easiest thing to do on the road in MLS.
So I'm going to finally chime in here and say something.
Sam, you're alive.
I am alive. I've been relaying my instructions via text the whole time. But I actually think the Crew might actually come up with a win. I think they play a different formation than they played on opening day. I think they throw Mena in to kind of throw things off for Chicago. And you might get something that you didn't see. I agree with Ralph. Forget everything you know about both those teams, because even in 5 games, those two teams are different than what they were on opening day. And that's something that you kind of, whether you like it or not, that's the reality of things. So I'm going to say 2-1 Crew. And Bridgeview is not a place that they won very often, but 2-1 Crew for sure. And if you don't believe me, listen to the fine tactical breakdowns of Massive Match Day, which should be available Thursday night on the feed, Friday sometime on the website with Chris and Nathaniel, because they pre-tell you what will happen at the game, and we recap basically what they say in our podcast afterwards, because generally they've been pretty good about forecasting what's going on.
You're right.
We got it way wrong this week, though. Both of us thought that Orlando were a much better team than they ended up being. So we were wrong last week, but we'll be right this week.
And I think all of you are wrong. Columbus Crew is the world's greatest soccer team. Bridgeview is garbage. Crew FC with a 3-1 win this weekend in Bridgeview to remain top of the table. We'll get the Steck Super Sub in there as well, and that will be Ethan Finley. Surprising, because Kakuta Mane will get the start. That should about wrap it up for this week. Roll Tribe, gentlemen.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Miller time.
See everyone else next week here on the Massive Report podcast. And remember, again, as Sam said and Chris, listen to the Massive Match Day on Friday so you can hear all of the good information, and then we'll just screw it up this time next week.
I would like to say something, though. I didn't mess up my prediction this week on Massive Report, so I actually nailed it 2-0, and I believed in the shutout, so I'm quite excited.
Well, Ralph, even a new blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while.
I'm going to enjoy that.
Okay, rookie, you can do the sponsors.
What's that?
Do you know who our sponsors are, Ralph?
Well, that's fantastic to mention. Land Grant Brewing Company at, I don't know the address.
424 West Down Street in Franklinton.
And then Oldsworth Arcade in Clintonville, which Clintonville is a fantastic spot in town. You should go check it out. And there's Hound Dog's Pizza next to it and Raising Cane's down the street. So it's a win-win for everybody.
You forgot the hashtag Dope Porch. check it out. The Land Grant at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton and Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street. Patronize both of them because they're awesome spots to go. And that should about wrap it up for this week. We'll see you guys.